asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. Yulia Skripal, the daughter of a former Russian spy who was poisoned alongside her father by a nerve agent, has been discharged from hospital. The 33-year-old left Salisbury District Hospital and has been taken to a secure location, FSN's Jessica King reports from London.
Salisbury District Hospital have discharged Yulia Skripal more than 5 weeks after she and her father Sergei were poisoned. Having made a rapid recovery in recent days, Ms. Skripal left hospital on Monday and has been taken to a secure location. Christine Blanchard, Deputy Chief Executive and Medical Director at Salisbury District Hospital, said both Ms. Skripal and her father have received round-the-clock care. They were exposed to the toxic nerve agent Novichok and found slumped on a park bench in the centre of Salisbury on the 4th of March. Yulia's father, 66-year-old Sergei, remains in hospital, but his condition is improving rapidly. Jessica King, London.
US President Donald Trump says reprisals against Syria for its latest alleged use of chemical weapons will be forceful and are now being planned in Washington. He spoke at a meeting of his top military staff where he called the chemical attack on the eastern city of Douma an atrocity and said no military actions were off the table. The situation was discussed in a tense UN Security Council meeting Monday, where Russia warned the alleged attack was staged and grave consequences could follow any US military action. China's President Xi Jinping has announced plans to further open up the country's economy and lower some import tariffs. Trade tension between the United States and China has mounted in recent days, but President Xi warned against protectionist measures, adding that cooperation will be needed for win-win results. FSN's William Denzelow reports from Beijing.
This message from China's president comes a day after US President Donald Trump took to social media to criticize Beijing's import tariffs on American autos. President Trump described the 25% tariff on cars as stupid trade. But his Chinese counterpart says the country now plans to lower duties on products, including autos. Speaking at the Chinese Boao Forum, President Xi Jinping also pledged to make it easier for foreign firms to invest in China. China's president didn't mention the US trade spat directly, but said that the Cold War mentality was outdated.
Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg faces two US congressional hearings over the next 2 days, where he can expect to be grilled on users' data privacy. On Monday, Facebook started sending messages to notify the 87 million users whose data was shared with the data mining firm Cambridge Analytica. He's also likely to be quizzed on whether Facebook had any influence in elections, including the 2016 US presidential election. Public sector workers in Germany have gone on strike in a bid to pressure employers to grant them a 6% pay increase. The strike, including ground staff at four of the country's busiest airports, is causing severe flight disruptions. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSC.
Thank you very much, Catherine Drew. Good to be with you this Tuesday. It's the 10th of April, 2018. Hope you've had a good day. My name is Richie Allen. You know that. We're live right now on Fab Radio 2 in the great city of Manchester. Triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, plenty of other places as well. Isn't there always a lot to talk about? There's a lot to talk about. So we'll just get on with it then. Tweets at the programme now if you feel like it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's at Richie Allen Show. Let the, not so much the fun and games begin.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, the geopolitical analyst and the former Democratic congressional candidate, Dean Henderson, joins the program a little bit later on. Dean, of course, is well known for several brilliant books. He's a regular guest on television political shows around the world, and obviously he's going to be talking about developments in Syria and the international community response to those developments and the media response as well. He's a great guy, Dean. We look forward to him. He joins the programme slightly later this hour. Right. Get rid of the old music there and crack on with it, because time is pressing. I think it is pressing anyway, so much as there is to talk about today. Hope you've had a good old day. Hope you're in good form. I'm sure your head's spinning with everything that's going on, not just in Syria, outside Syria, but in lots of other places as well. All sorts of things going on. Did you hear Catherine Drew there? Because you might just be coming home from work and you mightn't have seen the news or heard the news that Yulia Skripal, the daughter of the double agent Sergei Skripal, she's been discharged from hospital. This is a very bizarre story. And I have to wonder, when Theresa May addressed Parliament a few weeks ago and said that it was very, very unlikely, or I think May said, to quote her properly, she said it was highly unlikely the Skripals would ever recover. Was May saying that because either her office or maybe the Home Office had been in touch with the doctors treating the Skripals? Because I don't think that was the case. I don't think the folks treating the Skripals told May or Amber Rudd the Skripals were unlikely to recover. I think May, being a psychotic, sociopathic, pathological liar, was just making it up as she went along. Well, anyway, what's happened is they've taken her out of hospital. She left hospital yesterday, apparently, and was taken to a secure location. The hospital said today that it isn't the end of her treatment, but it does mark a significant milestone. And you might have heard Catherine at the top of the hour saying that Sergei, her dad, remains in hospital, doctors hoping that he will be discharged in due course. Will anybody get access to the Skripals, I wonder? I wonder. We talked on Sunday View about the possibility that they'll be spirited away across the Atlantic to the United States and given some sort of witness protection. Wow. It doesn't... You think you've seen it all. I've been around a long time. I've said this before. You think you've seen everything. You think you've heard every lie, every shakedown, every con, every snake oil sold. You think you've seen it all, and then something like that comes along. Anyway, shall we talk about the big story of the week and a major story developing, of course, over the last few days. Now, the US President Donald Trump has cancelled his first official trip to Latin America. He was due to head off to Latin America. Why has he cancelled it? Well, he said he needs to focus on the issue of the chemical attack in Syria and the response to it. The White House press office said Trump will remain in Washington to oversee the American response to Syria. That's a direct quote, the American response to Syria. The Russians have been warning, of course, as they might well do, that the United States and the United Kingdom and France should tread very carefully in terms of any military response in the country. The Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog has said it will send a fact-finding team to the site in Douma. This is the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW. They said a team would deploy to Syria shortly. The Russians said absolutely. And the Syrians said, absolutely, let them in and let them investigate. So there's where we are at the moment. Trump was meeting with the Emir of Qatar today. He's a man called Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Had to practice that a few times, so it's worth saying it again just to make up for it. Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, the Emir of Qatar, was sitting with Trump today. You'll hear him first. Here's only a smidgen of what they had to say about Syria.
Of course, we speak today and we see the suffering of the Syrian people. And me and the president, we see eye to eye that this matter has to stop immediately. We cannot tolerate with a war criminal, we cannot tolerate with someone who killed more than 500,000 of his own people. And this matter should end immediately. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you. And Tamim and I have been working for a number of years now, actually, even before the fact, on terrorism. And we're making sure that terrorism funding is stopped in the countries that we are really related to, because I feel related. But those countries are stopping the funding of terrorism. That includes UAE, it includes Saudi Arabia, it includes Qatar and others. A lot of countries were funding terrorism and we're stopping it. It's getting stopped and fast. Very important.
What's he talking about?
You've now become a very big advocate and we appreciate that.
Trump is as mad as a box of frogs. Trump, I figured out, is like that senior relative that we all have who, God loves him, hasn't a dicky bird as to what's going on. Hasn't the foggiest idea. Is completely clueless. What was he talking about there? Right. That was Trump, who's not gone to Latin America because he's going to oversee the US response. And you heard the Emir of Qatar there as well. So what about Theresa May today then? Well, she met with her cabinet and the heads of MI6, other foreign policy experts. They all met today to chat about the UK response to the alleged chemical weapon attack. There you are. What is May likely to do? Well, here's Sky News reporter Lewis Goodall with his take on what May is likely to do. You will hear Theresa May at the end of this as well.
She's really got a dilemma. On the one hand, I suspect that she and much of the rest of the British security services and foreign and defence policy establishment would probably quite like to act in tandem with the American President Donald Trump. Why? Well, of course, one reason is that they're keen to try and preserve as much of the special relationship as possible, especially as we head towards Brexit. And they certainly would not like to see the spectre of President Macron, President Trump, essentially having the new special security relationship of the world. They want Britain to be around that table. There's also an element where they've been both surprised and heartened by the Americans' response in the wake of the Skripal attack and attempted assassination, and there's an element where I think they want to try and keep President Trump on side. On the other hand, really, what really matters is about the building behind me, because if the Prime Minister decides that she does want a coordinated attack, the recent precedent suggests that she would have to have approval from the House of Commons. Earlier on, Theresa May wasn't giving anything away, though. Here's a flavour of what she had to say.
We're working with our allies and partners to assess what has happened on the ground in Syria. It is a barbaric chemical weapons attack that has taken place, of course, illegal use of chemical weapons. I've already spoken to President Macron about this. I'll be speaking to President Trump about it later today. And, of course, we'll be talking about this issue and including the discussions that are taking place at the Security Council of the United Nations.
Yeah, she's been talking to President Macron, and we know that Emmanuel likes a bit of mutton, doesn't he? I wonder how those conversations go. Mwinga noticed, by the way, as I noticed, that Trump made the statement while sitting next to the Emir of Qatar that he's been working with him on foreign policy issues for years. That's what I meant. Trump is as mad as a box of frogs. You know, any idea that anybody might have that Trump is running things, right? He's not. What's going to happen tonight then at 8 o'clock UK time? Nikki Haley, the US ambassador to the United Nations, will most likely tell the United Nations that the US will act with or without its blessing. Who cares about international law? Who cares about convention? Deal with that. If we want to go and bomb the absolute bejesus out of Syria, we will do just that. 'Twas a surreal day today. BBC Radio 4 invited Tony Blair on to speak to them. Now, to be fair, the reason they invited the mendacious one was because today is the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. That's why Blair was on, but he didn't miss the chance to suggest intervening in Syria.
If you put the other point of view and you say, well, let's suppose we do nothing, then you really are giving carte blanche to the regime to do whatever is necessary to retake opposition areas by force.
But the fact is they're winning anyway.
They are winning, but they're winning because their outside backers are prepared to intervene and to commit. And frankly, we have not been able to. Now, you know, this...
Well, because we don't want to go to war with Russia.
Well, it's not just about going to war with Russia. It's because of the difficulties of intervention. As we know, it's extremely difficult. But the problem is non-intervention is also a policy with consequence.
Iraq.
Iraq shows you that intervening is extremely difficult. But non-intervention, as we see from Syria, is also extremely difficult.
Blair must love doing these programmes because he gets an easier ride than if he went to Alton Towers. which has got the worst slides in the world, by the way, ever seen. Alton Tower slides, the worst ever. It couldn't be any easier for Blair, one of the greatest murderers ever to walk the earth, and not have his collar felt for it. It's so easy for him to traipse around, pop into Channel 4 News, do an interview with The Guardian, go to the BBC, no problem. Mad, isn't it? Tony Blair, eh? That was in The Independent today. He wrote a piece, or he was interviewed by The Independent, and they made an article from it. He was on BBC Radio 4 as well. Blair. The former US Congressman Ron Paul has been talking, Dr. Ron Paul. Now, Paul says he doesn't know who deployed chemical weapons in Syria, but to be fair, says Paul, Assad would be the last person he would suspect.
Well, the one thing is I don't know. I think the least likely would be Assad. This whole idea, Assad, and it's over and over again. I probably heard it 10 times today. Assad is gassing his own people, and they've said that every time it happened, Assad, and then a month or two later, they prove that was absolutely wrong. So I cannot see any reason why Assad would do this. There's no reason for Russian to have done this. There's somebody who wants to stir up trouble, and the people who want us to stay there. So we're getting, let's say there's a hint, there's a bone thrown out, we might leave, according to Trump. Well, no, we have to have a reason for staying. We're not going to let this happen. That's the problem. But you know, the McCain's people say, oh, we left Iraq too soon, and that's what happened. ISIS came in. Well, of course, the evidence is pretty strong that we've been pretty friendly with ISIS, and we use ISIS to try to fight our battle. So somebody wanted to stay there. I think the policymakers here, yeah, did not want us to leave, and somebody does it for them. But I just think this whole idea that all of a sudden that Assad's gassing his own people, I think is total nonsense.
Absolutely. We know they gave the rebels a whole stockpile of chlorine gas to use. The Russians talked about this on St. Patrick's Day. On Paddy's Day, told you about this, didn't I? We talked about it then. We talked about it on Sunday View. We talked about it yesterday. The Russians said, hey, listen, they're going to use chemical weapons, and then they're going to use that as the pretext to launch attacks. We're just warning you, giving you the heads up. Yeah. Let me talk about the media just for a minute. Don't switch off. Please stay with me. I promise you this is the last time. No, do stay with me for a few minutes. I put an article on the website today entitled something about 15 years after the Iraq war, the media is still cheerleading something like that. And the reason I wanted to put that article on the website today was because I do have a memory like an old effluent. I have a memory like an effluent or an elephant. And I recall in the late 2000s and 2 years ago, so in the late 2000s, journalists wrote articles. They were kind of mea culpa articles. Journalists were saying, we were asleep on our watch in the run-up to the Iraq war in 2003. That was nice. Didn't take away from the fact that millions of people were killed because journalists were asleep on their watch, but it was nice of them to admit it. That was back in the late 2000s. I recall an article that was in The Guardian, but it's mysteriously disappeared. It was a Guardian editorial from the late 2000s where they apologised for their own conduct. Can't find it anywhere now. How strange. But anyway, back in 2016, pretty much 2 years ago, a guy called Ian Burrell wrote a very good article about the conduct of the media in the run-up to the Iraq war. Shall I read a couple of paragraphs? Because I'm well aware of the fact that you might have a lot better or much better things to be doing than reading my puerile claptrap on my website, my opinions. You mightn't have read it, so I'm going to read you what Ian Burrell wrote. Have a listen to this. Ian Burrell. He wrote, so much of the current public distrust in the media and its incestuous relationship with the political establishment can be traced back to its failures in covering the Iraq war. I remember picking up the London Evening Standard on September 24th, 2002, and being gripped by the raw power of its splash, 45 minutes from attack. Hours earlier in Parliament, Tony Blair had handed down his flawed tablet of stone with its false claims of Saddam Hussein's weaponry and the media machine word into action, propelled by Alistair Campbell's spin team. The following morning, The Sun told its readers that it was they who were Saddam's target. The headline, Brits 45 minutes from doom. The initial reporting showed how a supposedly free and fearless press was powerless, vulnerable and gullible in a moment of national crisis. Utterly dependent on Downing Street and Britain's intelligence chiefs for information it could not verify, it meekly fell into line with government propagandists. Borrell went on to write in The Independent 2 years ago, the pressure on the UK media should not be underestimated. It seems extraordinary now that papers could have campaigned for the bloody mess that Iraq became. But at the outset, the operation was depicted by government officials as a humanitarian one, liberating the Iraqi people from oppression. Even liberal The Observer newspaper, to the horror of many colleagues on sister paper The Guardian, backed the case for war. In the US, the venerable New York Times was embarrassed as it swallowed fabricated evidence of Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, cynically supplied by members of the Iraqi opposition and pro-war lobbyists. That was a very powerful piece of writing and journalism by Ian Borrell in July 2016. And that was published on the back of the Chilcot report, John Chilcot's report into the events leading up to the Iraq war. And back in 2016, Borrell wasn't alone in coming out and saying, this will never happen again. We will never allow a situation like that develop again, where we are swallowing hook, line and sinker briefings from government ministers and reporting them as if they are fact. We let the country down. We let the military down, the young men and women who went to Iraq. We let the Iraqi civilians, a million of whom were murdered, and another several million who had to flee that country. We left them down. It won't happen again. Do you want me to give you a flavour of today's newspapers? Let me give you a flavour. The Guardian. After Douma, the West's response to Syria's regime must be military. That's Simon Tisdall in The Guardian. Do you want The Independent? Ironically, Tony Blair says UK should launch military action in Syria because non-intervention has consequences. The Chicago Tribune. The editorial, the price Assad should pay for gassing his people. Shall I go on? CNN, massive website, huge. Haley, as in Nikki Haley, says Russia's hands are covered in the blood of Syrian children. Shall I go on? The Daily Mail today, Assad's forces assassinated renowned war correspondent Marie Colvin and then celebrated after they learned their rockets had killed her. Lawsuit filed by her relatives' claim. Wild speculation, none of it backed up by any proof. Assad's regime murdered journalists years ago at the outset of all of this madness, according to the Mail. The Telegraph, former leader of the Conservative Party, William Hague, in an opinion piece, we must learn from past mistakes and act now to stop chemical warfare. William Hague. The Sun. You've got a place in the sun. You've got a place in the sun. Do you remember that? You've us at it now. Theresa May vows revenge on Assad over horrific chemical attacks on little children. Won't somebody please think of the children? Reuters, one of the biggest news agencies in the world. Syria chemical attack is war crime, according to a human rights chief. This is today, dear listener. This is today. I wonder, would Ian Borrell like to come on this programme and tell me about how it would never happen again? The New York Times, who were allegedly embarrassed by their own conduct before the Iraq war, today, lead with the story Bashar al-Assad knows what he can get away with. And there is a cynical picture of a man in a gas mask and a boiler suit holding a child to back up the article. You getting the picture? I'm going to keep going. Also in the Daily Mail today, Max Hastings. It is truly terrifying how many people will swallow Putin's lies amid Russian denials of complicity in the Syrian gas attack or the attempted murder of the Skripals, Max Hastings. What about USA Today? Syria's Assad picked the wrong time to launch a chemical attack on civilians. Shall I go on, or shall I leave it there? And ironically, I was thinking today, I would do a better job than these maniacs. Because if I wanted to achieve the same end as these monumental psychopaths, I would at least stick one or two stories in there with comments or with opinions of people who don't agree with the official narrative. I would say, if I was malevolent enough to be trying to spin a war on Syria, I would say, well, look, put a couple of articles in there, you know. You know, give Galloway a ring, or, I don't know, give somebody a ring who doesn't agree with this and give them a column. No, none of it. But Ian Burrell and a lot of other people, journalists, said to us in the wake of the Chilcot report it would never happen again. It's happening again. There's no dissent. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to subject you to, without melodrama, without over-exaggeration, one of the worst, one of the most dangerous interviews I've ever heard conducted by a British journalist in my life. And I mean that. It was an interview with Johnny Mercer, who is a Conservative MP. I think he's based in Plymouth. He's a former soldier as well. Isn't it interesting? Toxic Tory Tom Tugendhat. And now we have Johnny Mercer. Isn't it interesting how so many soldiers, officers, are now finding their way into Parliament? Eh? Smedley Butler, anyone? Anyone mention Smedley Butler? I wonder, is there a coup? Is there not that we have a Parliament worth defending anyway. We don't. But I wonder, is there a military coup underway with former officers of the British Army being picked to stand in elections and all of a sudden winning and ending up in Parliament? We'll hear from Johnny Mercer in a minute. This is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It is live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 and triggerwarning.tv.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back. I think I'm onto something with former servicemen, particularly former officers, finding their way into politics. Something very sinister about that. I believe. Right, it's nearly half past the hour. Let's just stay with this Russia-Syrian thing. A little bit later this evening, Nikki Haley, speaking of mad as a box of frogs, will basically lay an ultimatum on the floor of the United Nations and say, either we get support for taking on the bastard Bashar, or we'll go it alone. That's pretty much what's going to happen, I believe, a little bit later on. Shall we move on? Shall we move on? Okay. Let's move on then. So I mentioned before the break, Johnny Mercer is a Conservative Member of Parliament, former soldier. Now, he's a real beauty, is Johnny Mercer. He's been writing this week about how if we'd gone after Assad in 2013, when David Cameron lost a vote on military action in the Commons, well, we wouldn't be in this mess now. We should have went in or bombed the shite out of the Assad government in 2013. We wouldn't be in this now. So Kay Burley, surprise, surprise, had Mercer on. And Kay asked Mercer, and I want you to pay attention to what Kay says more than anything. She says, was he vindicated? Was David Cameron vindicated now in light of what's happening in Syria today? This is Johnny Mercer's response.
No, I mean, you know, I feel desperately for David Cameron, for George Osborne and everyone involved in it. I think at the time I said I thought it would be perhaps the most profound foreign policy mistake we've made in the last decade, but I think it's probably going to be longer than that. So I think clearly, look, everybody understands the hangover from Iraq and the mistakes were made, but we kind of, you know, we learn from that. We change, we establish a National Security Council, we make sure we never repeat their mistakes again, but it certainly doesn't mean we become a little Britain that just retreats and has this sort of insular view of itself. Our friends and our allies expect us to play a role. It's certainly concerning that France and the US, you know, they're very strong on this, and we haven't really said we're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with them yet. I hope that's going to come out. This is, you know, sometimes you have to stand up for what you believe in and what you think is right, and this is a clear moment for that.
Yeah. Just in case you missed it, he said he felt or feels desperately sorry for Bullingdon boys David Cameron and Gideon Osborne, just in case you missed it.
No, I mean, you know, I feel desperately for David Cameron, for George Osborne and everyone involved in it. I think at the time I said I thought it would be perhaps the most profound foreign policy mistake.
Profound foreign policy mistake. And he felt desperately sorry that David Cameron didn't win the vote in the Commons in 2013. Hold on to that thought. Kay Burley was loving this. Remember her first question, was David Cameron vindicated? This is Kay's next question. There's been no clever or dodgy editing done here. I don't do that. The entire interviews are available on Sky's website even, and their YouTube page or channel. So I don't do that. This is her next question.
Who do you blame for our previous lack of intervention?
Wow. Who do you blame for our previous lack of intervention?
Well, I think we're all to blame in a way. I mean, certainly coming from the services, you sort of look on in amusement at some of the debates that go on and the detail that goes on. But if you look at the fundamental principle of Parliament having a say on foreign security issues, those decisions are made in full picture of all the intelligence that is never going to be revealed to Parliament, that is never going to be revealed to the public.
Yeah. These decisions are made using evidence that's never going to be revealed to the Parliament. That's never going to be revealed right, to the people, to the public. It's kind of a case of, if we tell you that this guy has bombed his own citizens, you're just going to have to believe it, you know?
You'll burn your sources and the way you go about intelligence collecting.
And the reason we can't tell you, as he just said there, is because you'll burn your sources and you can't go about intelligence collecting. It's a wonderful scenario, that.
Ultimately, it's for the Prime Minister to make that decision. Now, I understand why David Cameron did that in 2013. The hangover from Iraq has been long and very, very painful, and some serious mistakes there. But now we've got to move on. We've got to, you know, get with the pace. Warfare is changing. Foreign policy is changing. We need to get with the pace. Keep up, because otherwise we'll get left behind. And I'm not, you know, like many of my colleagues, prepared to settle for a Britain that just settles into irrelevance. That's not who we are. It's not who we have been in the past. And you know, this is one of those issues that we need to step up to the plate on.
Yeah, don't forget, Mercer says intelligence will never be revealed to Parliament or the public to avoid burning sources. If we tell you Assad did it, then Assad did it. Now vote for war. And Burley is so hopelessly useless. She's incapable of challenging him. It gets worse. I asked you to remember the questions Burley asked thus far. She's asked two questions about who's responsible for not intervening and is David Cameron vindicated. Burley's third question, you won't believe your ears.
The Prime Minister was not supported, David Cameron not supported by the Labour Party, which is the opposition, which is why that motion failed. How easily would you sleep in your bed if you were Ed Miliband?
Yeah. Have a listen again.
The Prime Minister was not supported, David Cameron not supported by the Labour Party, which is the opposition, which is why that motion failed. How easily would you sleep in your bed if you were Ed Miliband?
You see, Burley's next question should have been to Mercer, the warmongering Zionist Muppet former military officer. Well, Mr. Mercer, a million people marched against the Iraq War in 2003. In 2013, hundreds of thousands of UK citizens contacted their local MPs and told them that if they did vote to bomb Syria, they would be out of a job. Isn't it true, Mr. Mercer, that you don't have a mandate from the people of the UK to go about bombing the shit out of innocent people in other countries? Isn't it true, Mr. Mercer, that cry as you might about the lack of intervention, the public expressed very clearly in 2013 that any MP who voted yes for military action in Syria would lose their fucking job? What does Burley say, though? Instead of saying that which I said, and obviously without the bad language, she says this.
The Prime Minister was not supported, David Cameron not supported by the Labour Party, which is the opposition, which is why that motion failed. How easily would you sleep in your bed if you were Ed Miliband?
How easily would you sleep in your bed if you were Ed Miliband? Because Ed Miliband was the leader of the Labour Party at the time, so presumably Burley is insinuating it's Ed Miliband's fault. Because Labour didn't support Cameron. Officially, anyway. I think, if I remember correctly, and do correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Miliband used the whip. I think MPs were given a free vote on it, correct me if I'm wrong, but Miliband said he wouldn't be voting for an intervention. And Burley says to the warmongering MP, if you were Miliband, would you sleep in your bed? What did he say, as a matter of interest?
Look, I have some private views on that, but I'm not going to make them public. I think, it's pretty clear, I think, to everybody how that situation has materialised. What assertions he may give him before the recall of Parliament, I think where we are is a very sad place, and those are questions for him to answer.
Yeah, so but you weren't that impressed?
Well, of course.
She just won't leave it go, will she, Burley, eh?
Well, of course not. You know, the situation where we are now is horrific in Syria. It was horrific then as well. There were no easy options. But back then, there was an opportunity. And in this country, you know, we are very quick to become pious over Iraq and talk about how difficult foreign intervention is and how, you know, there are no, you know, clean outcomes. And so we shouldn't get involved. And it's just not the reality of warfare. If we are going to play a role on the world stage that many of us think we should, we need to understand how it's changed, advocate for the British people as to how it's changed, and show that we actually stand up for something on this. I suspect the US and the French are going to do that, and I'll be sorely disappointed if we don't stand shoulder to shoulder with them, and that they're aware of that at the moment.
Well, the situation could have been very different in Syria if we had intervened previously.
Jesus Christ, Kay! Who's being interviewed here? Is it Mercer being interviewed, or is Mercer just a stooge being used by Sky News and Murdoch to reinforce a point? How many fucking times is Burley going to say, we should have intervened, we messed up? The inevitable conclusion to that, the inevitable follow-up to that is, now we need to do something. This is not journalism. It's horrendous, this. Am I the only one to notice this at 4:30 of an afternoon? I've got to believe that other people watching this garbage are looking at it and seeing through it. Wow. Christ. In answering Burley's statements, because that's what they are, were those comments, not questions. You know, things would have been different if we had intervened even in 2013. Mercer amazingly says next, "You're not going to believe your ears, that by not intervening in Syria in 2013, that was actually a worse foreign policy decision than invading Iraq. I'm shitting you, right? Wrong."
Well, I think it would have been different. It's hard to sort of look back to, you know, with rose-tinted glasses and think things would have changed. I mean, clearly the situation has got a lot worse. That intervention, I think, was the biggest foreign policy mistake we've seen. I think even bigger than Iraq, which, you know, we look back on now and look at the catalogue of errors that were made then. But, you know, Tony Blair and people going through that process then, they were making deliberate decisions that they thought were in the best interest of what was going on. I think what happened with that vote in Syria is you had individuals who, you know, some of them were entirely legitimate MPs who'd been asked to vote for Iraq and felt burned by that, and Libya and felt burned by that. And I entirely understand those, but I'm afraid there was a whole swathe of particularly Labour politicians who took the moment to sort of stand on the plinth and shoot down the government. And I think when you do that and you put the you know, your own personal interest before the national interest, you're going to end up in a pretty bad place. And certainly that's what's happened over Syria.
What a bloodthirsty bastard he is. Imagine not interjecting and jumping all over his contention that not intervening in Syria in 2013 and killing tens of thousands of Syrians with airstrikes was a worse policy, foreign policy decision than killing over a million Iraqis and making 3 million more homeless based on a pack of lies. Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. He didn't. Saddam harboured Al-Qaeda. He didn't. They were his sworn enemies. Politically, religiously, lies. And you notice that Burley didn't interject a single time. But to be fair, Kay was holding fire till the very end. Till the very end. When she nailed Mercer with an absolutely devastating final question.
Did you prefer being a soldier or a politician?
That's a very unfair question, isn't it?
Yeah, good stuff. Right, thanks for the tweets. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. This is your Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 17 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Shortly, Dean Henderson will join the programme live from Missouri. Can't wait to speak with Dean. We'll talk about these issues and much more besides. Did you prefer being a soldier or a politician? Yeah. Right, let's move on. Israel's Labour Party, that's the Israeli Labour Party, they've announced that they've suspended relations with the UK Labour Party over claims that Jeremy Corbyn has allowed hostility to the Jewish community. Jeremy has allowed hostility to the Jewish community, so Israel's Labour Party has said no more relations. Good old-fashioned clean relations. No relations. In a letter to Corbyn, the leader Avi Gabay claims he has allowed, Corbyn has allowed, anti-Semitic statements and actions. I thought Corbyn was very fond of the Palestinians. Obviously, I was wrong. The Israeli Labour Party leader accuses Corbyn of very public hatred of the policies of the government of the State of Israel. But what's wrong with that? Surely even Corbyn wouldn't deny that. Hey, Corbyn! You hate the Israeli government policies, you bastard. I do, as it happens, yeah. I do. Thanks for noticing. I'm here all week. That's what I would say if I was Jezza. I'm here all week, Avi. Avi, Christ almighty. Corbyn said the Labour Party in Israel should have had the courtesy to speak with him before severing relations. Before severing relations, he could have spoken with me. Corbyn referred to Shami Chakrabarty's report into anti-Semitism in Labour, and Corbyn said, "I wish they would understand that we are determined to drive out anti-Semitism in every way from our society and where it exists in any party, including my own." In his letter, Mr. Gabay, or Gabay, the Labour Israeli Labour Party guy, gets complicated, right? He said, and by the way, they're the Israeli main opposition party, he hailed the long history of friendship with UK Labour. "And yet," he wrote in the letter, "it is my responsibility to acknowledge the hostility you have shown the Jewish community and the anti-Semitic statements you have allowed as leader of the Labour Party in the UK. There will be a temporary suspension of all formal relations between the two parties. We cannot continue while you fail to adequately address the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party." Mr. Gabay says the policies of Israel's opposition party and the ruling coalition were aligned when it came to the security of our citizens and the actions of our soldiers, who have just been taking pot shots at Palestinians, unarmed, of all ages, shooting down people, unarmed, innocent people. Right. Corbyn has said, allegedly, that he wants an inquiry into UK arms sales to Israel. Maybe that's what prompted the letter today from the Israeli Labour Party. Jesus, 14 minutes to the top of the hour. Thanks for the tweets. Keep them coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Hi to William Henderson, to Tony Allars. How you doing, Tony? To David Stanford, who says there's a special place in hell for Kay Burley. I don't know about that, David. I hold in contempt the people who watch it and believe it, more so than I hold Burley in contempt, to be honest. Sean McDonald tweets, same old agenda, just new faces. Mentioned Mwinga already. Cartoon drunk of Argyle, how are we doing there? Rob Allen. Rob Allen says, Burley ain't stupid. Short and sweet, Rob. Never said she was, Rob. Maybe I did I? I don't remember. If I did, of course, it was in anger. I don't believe she's stupid. Rich Mortimer, though, says, what an ignorant bastard. Right. Don't hold back, Rich. Hi to Charlotte Binns in Burnley, and to everybody else who's joining in on the old Twitter feed there. Do talk amongst one another. Share your opinions. And David Banner, who's been on the run since forever, has been tweeting at David_Banner. How you doing, David? I hope you've been calm, keeping calm, and you've not had to spend too much money on jeans, shoes and shirts of late. Zero evidence yet again, says David Banner. This makes me sick and angry. It makes me sick and angry too, mate. But you know what? Nothing is going to stop them bombing Syria and killing thousands of people and possibly triggering a third world war. Paul Craig Roberts, old friend of mine, don't use the word friend too lightly, not in this business. Paul has been writing today, go to paulcraigroberts.org. He's been writing about this and he believes we're on the brink. And Paul is not a fearmonger. He's a very, very, very experienced civil servant, very experienced geopolitical commentator and financial expert. And he reckons we could be on the brink. Let's have some music from Blues Traveller while we calm ourselves down on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, the, what is it, the 10th of April 2018. Love this song. Back with more comment and Dean Henderson in a few minutes.
Tell me.
Blues Traveller on the Richie Allen Show, Tuesday, April 10th, 2018, live from Manchester, as we do it, it's live. You might be getting the podcast. The programme, of course, is archived on podomatic.com, but it can be accessed through Spotify, iTunes, and plenty of other places as well, if you don't want to do that. And of course, Simon, top man Simon Stewart, puts the interviews and the monologues on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/Richie Allen Show. I want to give a big shout out to my friend Chris Seeley, who has been a huge support for this program going back to the very, very, very early days of it. And you will hear, when I do take an ad break, you will hear the ad break for the H2O app, which is an app that was designed by Chris and friends of his. Very interesting stuff this, by the way, and a lot of people have downloaded it. One of the things Chris wanted to do with the app, and by the way, the website for the app is H2O app, and there are two P's in app, H2O app.online. That's H2O app.online. And the app was a not, is, not was, was designed to be and is a not-for-profit app. No money is made by Chris and the team that worked on it with him. The app was launched basically to introduce the notion of, or the concept of, healing through frequency and vibrations and through sound and water, and to get people talking about that and thinking about it as well. But one of the things he wanted to do was to create a kind of a growing healing fund that would be used to help give free alternative treatments to people who are sick. And they've just begun to do that this month, because the app has been successful enough so far that they've generated some money, and they're going to use the money to buy CBD oil for people living with chronic pain. That's a great thing, that, isn't it? I'm really proud of that, and I'm proud of Chris for doing it. I really am. To find out more about that, go to H2O app. That's app dot online. H2O app. APP dot online, and it's a great thing. I'm really, really chuffed to be involved with that. Big shout out to Chris and everybody at H2O app dot online. Good on them. Well done. Good stuff. I appreciate that. Coming up for 4 minutes to the top of the hour, Dean Henderson will be with me in a few minutes' time. You don't want to miss Dean. We're going to be talking, obviously, about the rush, or the apparent rush to action of some sort in Syria. I did mention in one of my articles today that I've been hearing no-fly zone. One or two people got in touch to say, well, who have you been hearing that from? Well, obviously, there are... The programme is connected to any number of geopolitical analysts around the world, not just in the independent media, but in the mainstream media as well. There is talk, and there are whispers, of an attempt to try and introduce or police a no-fly zone over Syria. Now, I wouldn't read too much into that, and I would take that with a pinch of salt because of the obvious logistical problems, because of the presence of Russia there, a very well-armed and very, very capable Russian Air Force and Russian military. But those were the whispers that we were hearing today. We'll get into this with Dean Henderson, the geopolitical analyst, former Democratic congressional nominee, as well, don't forget, and author of several outstanding books, Dean Henderson. He'll join us in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, though, very quick break, then we'll come back. I think we'll take the news headlines before speaking with Dean, and then we'll crack on. It's Tuesday's programme.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Don't forget, if you've got a question for Dean Henderson, tweet it to at Richie Allen Show. Couldn't be simpler, at Richie Allen Show. And Dean will be happy to hear from you. We'll have Dean for about 40, 45 minutes. There is an awful lot to get through. Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook impresario, the head honcho at Facebook, is taking part in two congressional hearings, one today, one tomorrow, where he's answering questions about Cambridge Analytica and about how the data of 80 million Facebook users could have ended up in the hands of people who are going to use it for nefarious reasons and all of that. Zuckerberg is there now, looking very dapper, in a probably several thousand dollar navy suit, light navy. Is it light navy? Is it light blue? I don't know how you describe it. Anyway, he's there and it's being covered. And if there's anything interesting in it, we'll bring it to you a little bit later on. In the meantime, we're going to take the news headlines now. Let's have some headlines, just 30 seconds of headlines. I don't think anything too dramatic has happened in the interim period since we heard Catherine at the top of the air, but we'll find out is there anything new? It's over to FSN.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. President Trump has canceled a planned trip to South America to tackle the U.S. response to a suspected chemical weapons attack in Syria. Facebook boss Mark Zuckerberg is testifying in front of U.S. lawmakers following recent data scandals. And Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov has accepted an invitation to visit North Korea after a meeting with his counterpart, Ryong Ho.
Thanks very much, Rebecca Foster. This is the Richie Allen Show, by the way. It's coming up for a minute past the hour for Tuesday, April 10th, 2018. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Thank you for making it so. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio. We're on triggerwarning.tv and richieallen.co.uk. Do check out richieallen.co.uk. Articles on there on a daily basis of interest to you, at least I believe so. Check them out. Dean Henderson standing by and will join me in a couple of minutes' time. Good to be with you.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Bruce the Boss Springsteen and Human Touch before Dean Henderson.
You and me, we were the pretenders. We let it all slip away. In the end, what you don't surrender, well, the world just strips away. Girl, ain't no kindness in the face of strangers. We ain't gonna find no miracles here. Well, you can wait on your blessings, my darling. I got a deal for you.
music from Bruce Springsteen, Human Touch, on the Richie Allen Show, 4 minutes past the hour for Tuesday. Yeah, gotta say hi to Bass Ninja, who just managed to make it home. He had to cross Manchester. And of course, Manchester City host Liverpool in the Champions League quarter-final. So the traffic was in meltdown in the great city late this afternoon. Welcome, anyway, Bass Ninja. Better late than ever, because you haven't missed a word from the terrific Dean Henderson. I mentioned earlier on, you know all about Dean by now, a geopolitical analyst. You will see Dean popping up on talk shows all around the world, providing shrewd and brilliantly briefed analysis on the events that we talk about on programmes like this. He's a former Democratic congressional nominee as well, don't forget that. And he's written some absolutely brilliant books, which we've discussed on the programme before, and that's not sycophancy. These books are outstanding. Check them out at his website. It's hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. He's live today from Missouri. Let's welcome back our friend and colleague Dean Henderson. Dean, thanks for taking the time today. How are you?
I'm great, Richie. Thanks for the kind intro, and I always enjoy talking with you, my friend.
Thanks for coming on, Dean. Just 2 years ago, when the Chilcot Report published its findings into the run-up to the Iraq War, it was very critical, obviously, of decisions made by Tony Blair and all the rest of it. But shortly after that, journalists from around the world, including New York Times journalists, journalists here in the UK, Telegraph, Guardian, Daily Mirror, they apologised profusely for letting people down and for not stopping the war path based on the pack of lies that was weapons of mass destruction and all the rest of it. And some of them assured us, Dean, that they would never let us down again. But as I look at the newspaper headlines today from the Chicago Tribune, from the New York Times, from USA Today, from the Daily Mail in London, it's like deja vu all over again, Dean. What do you think?
Yeah, it sure is, Richie. And, you know, let's remind folks that it was British intelligence, the MI6, that gave the CIA the information saying that Saddam Hussein had this yellow cake uranium, which turned out to be false. So we have to remember that, because, again, in the situation with Shreepal in Salisbury in England, where there's no evidence, obviously, where Boris Johnson's been caught on TV lying, lying, you know, when this Portendown lab director was on TV 2 weeks later contradicting what Johnson said. And Johnson didn't just say it was Russia. He said this Portendown director told him it was Russia. Then the Portendown guy comes on 2 weeks later and says, we don't know where it's from. And again, this is a case, I think, of basically it's the MI6. They gave this guy some kind of, you know, slight mild toxin. He may even be playing along. Shreepal may still be an M16 agent. And they're just, now the CIA is going to give him, basically diplomatic immunity in America, bring him to the United States. And that was part of the deal, I'm sure. Here, take this mild, you know, toxin, whatever, go to sleep for a while. We won't let anybody take pictures of you in the hospital. You notice there's no pictures of these people in the hospital. And then when we're all done playing this game and blaming Russia, we'll go. In addition to that, Trump initially was the only Western world leader who didn't jump on the bandwagon and say, yeah, it was Russia. He actually said, we have to look at the evidence. Imagine that. Meanwhile, U.S. Congress, both parties howling for Russia's head, Putin's head, the French, you know, the Germans, NATO, everybody. But Trump held back. So what do? They come out with this porn star on 60 Minutes. And the next day, all the niceties are gone. The Twitter congratulations to Putin, which received, just people were just enraged by that. All these politically correct liberals, wanting to go to war, just enraged by that. They're enraged by the fact that he actually invited Putin to a meeting at the White House. Okay, so there's this. So then, 2 days ago, or yesterday, actually, here we go with the sarin gas attack again, and Assad, and they just mopped up Eastern Ghouta, Assad, the Russians, Iran, Hezbollah, just basically liberated Eastern Ghouta from these MI6 terrorists, M16 terrorists. And here we go again, the sarin gas story, the old sarin gas serenade. And again, Trump last week, what'd he say? He said, we're thinking about getting out of Syria. So what do we have yesterday? We had the FBI raiding Trump's attorney's office. This is how it works. Trump's just a punching bag. He's easy to be a punching bag because he's a very dislikable person. And everybody, not many people like him in the right mind. And so you get a guy in there with these Panamas, these dark stains on his past, and there's many, and use them against him. And you say, look, you either go to war, Bolton's in there now, Pompeo, they're saying, and they're the neocons. They represent the Rothschild banking interest in the city of London, which, by the way, would love nothing better for America and Russia to be enemies, because they sit in the middle and they don't ever want those two countries to be friends, because God forbid, maybe we'd actually, you know, get out from under the thumb of the crown. And what's funny is, you know, there's this other myth when the Iraq war happened, you know, Tony Blair is a poodle. No, Americans are the poodle. George Bush was the poodle. You see, that's just another lie. That's just another piece of disinformation where they want you to believe that somehow the CIA was calling the shots, but they weren't. The MI6 was calling the shots. They usually use Mossad as their surrogate, because Mossad in Israel is basically a Rothschild entity, a Rothschild intelligence service. And you have the same situation with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica, where Cambridge Analytica, I think, is a British intelligence front, interfered in over 200 elections, and then used Facebook to elect Trump. Why would they want to elect Trump? Oh, because then they can put Hillary and the deep state crowd, the CIA crowd, in the opposition, and they can push for war, and Trump can be the perfect punching bag. All the while, Trump's the foil and Russia's the target. And all the liberals hate Trump, so they don't even realize that they're marching us to war. They're marching America to war. For who? For the same people we went to war with in World War I and World War II, and that would be the Rothschild banking interests in the city of London.
This is really powerful stuff, Dean, because obviously I've hammered the bejesus out of Trump for a long time.
Yeah,
but
me too.
And you too. But I understand the dots that you're connecting, and that I really do get, you know, that Trump was chosen for those reasons, regardless of what Trump might think personally about these issues. And it's interesting you mentioned that he did talk about, you know, he talked a lot, obviously, in the campaign about non-interventionism policies, but he did allude to, a week ago, as you said, you know, rolling back on Syria, and then we had the Stormy Daniels stuff, as you said there. And that's why they choose these people, because they choose them because they've not been very good boys. They've not been altar boys or, you know, good Catholics in their lives. And they are leveraged up to the hilt, and they can effectively control them. Do you know what I'm very interested in? All of that, of course, but what you said a minute ago, because it kind of embarrasses me. You talked about Sergei Skripal, and you said he might even be part of the operation. I'm going to be absolutely honest and say I'm ashamed that scenario didn't occur to me. Maybe it's tiredness. It never occurred to me that somebody would... No, honest to God, some of the listeners say Richie's very naive. It never actually occurred to me that somebody would have tapped Skripal on the shoulder and said, hey, Sergei, do you want to get back in the game for a few days or a few weeks, you know? Jesus, Dean, you've knocked me flat out there, because I didn't consider that Skripal might have been involved in it. Why didn't
well,
I? You're right.
Yeah.
Maybe he was.
Well, yeah, their lies, it's just a steady stream of lies. And the lies are so big that it's just hard for people to take it in such a different direction, because they're all the while they're hurting our thoughts in one direction. And you didn't come up with that on my own either, by the way. I was naive to it till a couple of days ago, and I heard crosstalk on RT and some guys were bringing this up, Mark Sloboda and some guys. So it's not like some original thought I had either. And I felt stupid at that time too. Like, why didn't I think of that? But actually they didn't say he was still working for MI6. That is my own original thought, but they did say that he was put under maybe by some mild fish toxin. I think there was a Moon of Alabama blog is where Sloboda said he got that. So he was not original to him. This is just the nature of information. I mean, nobody has an original thought. We all just have this collective consciousness, and we have to work it out. We have to work it out, but we have to continue to use our own minds. And basically everything the Western media tells us, whether it's newspaper or TV or anything, you just have to know that it's a lie. You have to know that. And you have to know it's a war, that we're at war, that these people have declared war on us. And not only with World War III scenario they're trying to set up, but with GMO foods and with, you know, toxic water and chemtrails and all kinds of stuff. But they've declared war on us. So you have to know that they're your enemy. I mean, you have to know they're your enemy. And I know you do, Richie, but everybody out there, you just have to know this. And so every time you read something or hear something these people say, just know it's a lie.
I've been scared.
That's that simple.
I'm going to be honest. I've been somewhat scared, not for me, but for other people. You know, as a broadcaster, you have a responsibility. And you're an excellent writer. And you had, you know, a stint in politics. And you know that while you should never censor yourself, you do have a responsibility in terms of what you might influence people. And I've been reluctant until lately to use terminology like that, they're the enemy, for fear that somebody might be listening to the programme and they might be really having a bad time of it. And then they might physically assault somebody. They might meet one of their local councillors or, you know, and I don't want that to happen.
No,
but you're right, Dean. They are the enemy. They represent a clear and present danger to our health, to our well-being and to our prosperity. I just must mention this, by the way. As Dean is talking, we've got Dean Henderson on the line. It's interesting, Dean, that I'm never right, Dean. Whenever I make a prediction, it's always wrong. But I got one right yesterday. I was talking about the Russian general, Sergei Rudsky, who on St. Patrick's Day said that the Americans had given chlorine gas to Syrian rebels that would be used in a false flag attack. So the Russians predicted this several weeks ago. Jokingly, I suggested on the show this week that that Russia's enemies would say, oh, that was a basic instinct ploy, Sharon Stone. You know, I'd have to be pretty stupid to write about killing somebody in my book and then kill somebody in the exact same way that I described in my book. And that's exactly what they were doing today. They were saying, oh, that was brilliant by the Russians 3 weeks ago to say, oh, a load of chlorine gas has been given to the rebels, so that would cover the Russians. So they're trying to blame the Russians for doing it. It's crazy, Dean. What are we going to do about it, Dean?
Well, we just have to continue to counter their lies. And what I try to do as a writer is get out in front of these stories before the mainstream media works it over. I wrote a column on March 14th called Russian Deaths and an MI6 False Flag. I have no evidence of that at that time. I still have no evidence of that. But the way I look at it, Richie, you know, if Boris Johnson could go around throwing accusations at the Russians with no evidence, then I can go ahead and I can go with my gut anyway and say it is based on history. I mean, the guy's 66, she's 33. You know, it has all the markings of a ritual kind of Illuminati thing. It's the same pattern of you know, with the Litvinenko poisoning, Alexander Litvinenko, who was also a double agent turned to British agent, and his own father Walter says that Russia was not behind his death.
That's right.
To this day, there's also Berezovsky died mysteriously. There's Glushkov, this other guy that died at the same time the Shripals. Nobody's even talking about that, but he was another one of the Russian oligarchs that Putin had kicked out of Russia. And to my mind, Glushkov and Berezovsky, they probably just, you know, they knew too much and they were maybe going senile and they were in on the game. I mean, they were part of the rape of Russia. You know, let's not forget in 1999, the Goldman Sachs boys went into Russia. And by the time they were done with using their drunken puppet Yeltsin, they had given over most of the oil reserves in Russia to the Four Horsemen, so that those four companies, ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, Amoco, and Chevron Texaco literally doubled their asset value in 1999 with the takeover of those assets in Kazakhstan, in Kyrgyzstan, in Uzbekistan, in all the stands, in the countries that we basically lopped off of the Soviet Union, you know, and that's that Central Asia area, and that's the grand chessboard, and that's still the game, and that's why it looks to me like Pompeo and Bolton, you know, they're neocons, they were with Project for a New American Century. These guys are Wolfowitz and Pearl,
yeah,
proteges. They were, you know, Pearl and Wolfowitz, dual Israeli citizens. And so this is their plan. They, you know, let's go wreck the Middle East. And they've done it. Syria, Libya, Iraq, on and on, Afghanistan. And now they want to do Iran. And they really, I think, might be that naive that they actually think they can do that. And let me tell you, my friend, if that comes up, it's going to be really possibly the end of Western civilization, because I don't have any doubt that the Russian Chinese Iranian alliance will just kick the ass of these City of London bankers and their little mercenary armies.
It's interesting you say that, because Paul Craig Roberts is writing today, mutual friend of ours, and somebody I have a lot of time for, Paul. I don't always agree with Paul, but I always enjoy speaking with him. Paul is very reluctant. It's not that he's reluctant, but he doesn't see the Rothschild, Rockefeller, Warburg dynasty connection. He doesn't see that. And I genuinely believe he doesn't see that. Paul is not, he's not scared of anything. But Paul reckons that with Trump not going to Latin America today, with him being surrounded by the people you mentioned already, of course, Bolton being very significant here, that we might be on the brink, Dean. And I genuinely don't like to be talking about stuff like this and fear-mongering, because fear porn does sell. But we are on the brink. Are we as close to conflict with Russia? Are we as close as we've been since the Cuban Missile Crisis? Or is that just sensationalism?
No, I don't think it is, Richie. And I'm the same way. I don't come up with these, you know, I don't try to write sensationalist, you know, articles and headlines just to get, you know, get press or whatever, but because it is, there's a lot of people out there that do that. Half of them are working for the CIA, you know, trying to scare people with these fake scenarios that aren't going to happen. My last article, which I wrote the 27th of March, or I guess second to last, was called Rothschild's March to World War III. And that's exactly what I think this is. That's what Russiagate was. It was an attempt to pressure, put the pressure. That's what the Shreveport thing is. That's, you know, that's what the whole thing in Syria. So I think it's going to start. They want it to start in the Middle East. I mean, they want it to start. I see a scenario where they're going to pick on the weakest link possible that's left, and that would be Hezbollah in Lebanon. So I still would watch for something to be cooked up there. And then they'll see if Iran intervenes, if Israel intervenes, and then it could go from there. But I mean, it really just looks to me like they're just not going to let up on Trump until he does what they want. And it just seems to be what they want. And I think the reason they want it, again, it's part of their econometric modeling. And they know that there's these huge bubbles in real estate, huge bubble in the Wall Street, huge bubble in the bond market. There's bubbles everywhere you look, man. And there's, you know, people are in debt, they're in hock, and they don't want to just deflate the thing and let the air come out by itself and slow the economy down. They have to have this growth. They're just, you know, they have to make more billions, you know, and the best way, of course, they do that is with their war machine and their military industrial complex, which is what we're talking about. But I would call it more of a banker military complex, because, you know, it's a given that they own the industrial part anyway. So let's call it what it is. It's a banker military complex, and the bankers make money off of war. And as I said before, it's the same situation where, you know, back during World War One, it was Jack Morgan, J.P. Morgan's son, who basically lobbied along with the Carnegie Institute for Peace, you know, to basically get the United States involved in World War One on the side of who? The City of London. Then World War Two comes. And then, of course, the Morgans sold arms and made a lot of money. World War Two comes around, same situation. And you have a false flag at Pearl Harbor, where the United States took all of its planes and expensive military equipment out of Pearl Harbor before the Japanese bombed it. They knew they were going to bomb it. They were told by several different countries that was going to happen. And this was an attempt by Winston Churchill and the Crown to get America to come fight their war against Hitler for them. Before the Pearl Harbor false flag, 85% of Americans didn't want to go into World War II. After Pearl Harbor, it was just about the exact opposite. 85% wanted to go, and we went. And yeah, Hitler was a bad guy. He was created by the City of London too. But we shouldn't have went, and we shouldn't have went in World War I, and we shouldn't go this time. And it's about time the United States, American people, realize what's going on, which is that we're a Hessianized mercenary colony for the City of London. We pay for the wars, Americans do. We go in debt, $24 trillion debt. Our boys die. The first oil contract in Iraq, who'd it go to? British Petroleum.
That's right.
The second one, Royal Dutch Shell.
No
this
bait.
Is Crown entities. And it is time. It is high time we quit being basically serfs and mercenaries for these people who are just unscrupulous. Beyond what you could believe. They're devils. They will tell lies. Then they do tell lies every single day to accomplish their agenda.
No bid contracts as well, those contracts. Let me just remind our listeners, the geopolitical analyst, the author, and the former Democratic congressional candidate, Dean Henderson, my friend, is live on the line from Missouri. It's great to have Dean back on the programme. Check out Dean's, I'm going to tweet it out, by the way, Dean's website. It's hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Links there to Dean's book as well. Fascinating that the cabal would choose Trump because Trump was a completely eccentric, completely one-off, his opinions were his own, a bit mad, a bit of a playboy, that they would choose him specifically because he had said so much about not wanting to carry on interventionism so that they could easier sell these wars by coercing him. It would be easier to do that and sell it to the public than it would have been through the criminal Clinton cartel, which people were absolutely sick of. That's a really fascinating scenario. Here's a question for you now. I don't know if you will have come across this, Dean, but the Skripal story, when it emerged, the man who was put out to bat by the psychopaths, let's call them that, was a guy called Tom Tugendhat. Now, he's a member of Parliament, and he's a very new member of Parliament. He won his seat in the last election, but he's also a former military officer. And what was really extraordinary about Tom Tugendhat was he's a big fan of Israel, and he'd written articles for various magazines about Israel and about Israel being right and Israel is this and Israel is that. He was only an MP a very short time. We're talking literally only a few months. And all of a sudden, he was given the job of chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. That's the Parliamentary Foreign Affairs Committee. An extraordinary success for such a new member of Parliament. The previous chairman had been forced out because he'd written a very negative report about Libya. A brilliant report describing the Libyan intervention as, you know, as basically fraudulent, illegal and all of that. So this guy gets this really prestigious job out of nowhere, and he's a military officer, and he was put out on the television every day to say that the Skripals were poisoned by Russia. Wait for this, Dean. Wait for this. Today, a member of Parliament from Plymouth, which is on the south coast, a guy called Johnny Mercer. Mercer has been sent onto every television and radio station today to promote intervention in Syria. Mercer is a former army officer. We're seeing a lot of former army officers getting seats in Parliament, and I'm thinking Smedley Butler. Is there some sort of coup going on, Dean? Military guys, not soldiers now, not poor grunts who, you know, had to suffer, you know, in wars, but officers are getting, not only are they getting jobs and winning seats in Parliament, but they're also getting prestigious jobs like heading up the Foreign Affairs Committee. What do you think?
Well, that's really interesting, Richie, because the same thing is happening. There was an excellent article on the World Socialist website. Patrick Walker wrote it, I think, and he was talking about how there's all these ex-military, ex-CIA, supposedly ex-CIA people running in the Democratic Party in the United States this election cycle. And, you know, November, we have midterm elections this year. And he said there, he just could not, he named many, many names. And it's just amazing. But again, it's this deep state being on the sort in the opposition so that they can put the screws to Trump and make fun of him and make him look bad and then control him when he doesn't do what they want. And so it's very possible that they're working up to that as a contingency. I mean, I think as long as Trump, you know, if he bombs Syria tomorrow, the FBI raid, it'll go away. They won't make another word about it. But if he doesn't, then they're going to dig into some more stuff and threaten him with some more stuff. Maybe there'll be another porn star, you know, or maybe there'll be another whatever. But that's just how it works. So they just, it's a turning of the screws. And again, they know the guy's, you know, very unlikable. But I think one thing is this, you know, they got him in there to take care of their economic policies. And they knew he would because he's a definite, you know, right winger to the max and, you know, cut corporate taxes and all this kind of stuff. But they knew that his foreign policy was a little bit too friendly, maybe a little bit too much to do with diplomacy. And Clinton was just the opposite. Her programs, you know, there probably would have been some more clean air regulations, clean whatever, regulate, cost the corporations some money. There wouldn't have been a corporate tax cut. So in a way, Trump was really better you know, to serve them as long as they could rein in his foreign policy, or not necessarily, I shouldn't say rein it in, I should say turn it loose, because he would like to rein it in, and they want to turn it loose some more. So I think that's the situation, but I have no doubt. Interesting that that's going on in Britain with these military people getting into your parliament, because the same situation seems to be occurring here in the United States in the Democratic Party, I'm told, mostly in the run-up to this election. So I think there's always a contingency plan. Again, you know, that's what happened with Kennedy. He, you know, John F. Kennedy was the last president we had who gave really any hope of ending this serfdom to the bankers. And when he started a new currency system based on silver, that's when they assassinated him. It wasn't, you know, that he wasn't aggressive enough with Cuba. It wasn't that he wasn't, you know, enough of a hawk in Vietnam, but it was actually that he was going to start a silver-based, and he did start a silver-based currency issued by the Treasury Department, not by a private banking cartel. And that's when he was killed. And so, you know, and before that, of course, they tried to do the same to him, Marilyn Monroe and all his affairs and trysts,
and his brother,
tried to discredit him in many, many ways. And when that didn't work, and he finally, you know, he said he was going to blow the CIA into a million pieces. I mean, he talked about the Freemasons. He talked about secret society. He talked about a lot of things that me and you talk about. And, you know, now it's a conspiracy theory. Well, back then our president was talking about it. Hell, I mean, you go back to Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, that were using the word Illuminati. I mean, that's the thing, you know, people don't realize the long, long, long history of just serfdom to these bankers that the whole world has had to endure. And it's just time to put an end to it. And the only way we're going to do it is go to the head of the snake, which is the City of London bankers, the Wall Street bankers. And we just got to nationalize them. We just got to throw them in jail. I mean, it's not that hard to do. It's just getting people, getting their heads turned around to where they're not interested in listening to a porn star, what she has to say about Trump. And they're more interested maybe in bigger issues like, you know, nationalizing the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and taking back our money system. And ending this debt slavery to these bankers.
That's right. And this is and this is the crux of everything. And again, the basis for Dean's books, by the way, hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Nobody has written more and nobody has written in greater depth about the financial system put in place by these elites to keep total control of everything. Nobody has done more on that than Dean Henderson. I'm telling you, folks, check him out. So, Dean, what we're seeing then is, and what we have seen in recent months here in the UK, we've seen what on the face of it appears to be an attack on Jeremy Corbyn and on the Labour Party. Now, I say on the face of it because to Corbyn supporters, it looks very real. It looks that, oh, they're terrified of Jeremy. They're terrified of him. That's why they're making up all these stories of anti-Semitism. I don't believe they're terrified of Jeremy. They don't care who's in. As long as people are voting for somebody, they don't care. What they're doing with this Corbyn thing is they're trying to criminalize not just criticism of Israel, but any discussion that leads to unveiling, as it were, these financial institutions, their history, who's behind them, these families. Because that's where it goes. That's where the Yellow Brick Road ultimately ends up. And all this anti-Semitism garbage, Dean, is really about completely closing off any avenues to discussing the financial elites. Yeah. Talk to us about that, because I'm convinced of that. It's not about Corbyn. It's about much deeper than that. Go ahead.
No, it's a brilliant take on it. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, you can criticize the CIA and the NSA, and they might monitor your phone and tap your internet. If you criticize the Mossad, it gets a little more serious, again, because you're following that yellow brick road, and then they'll call you an anti-Semite. But if you criticize British intelligence, they'll try to kill you, like they've done to me twice. And every article I write, and that's what I'm writing about, because we have to take that yellow brick road, Richie. We have to take it all the way to the end. We don't have much time. We don't have much time. And you're exactly right. Corbyn painted as an anti-Semite by a bunch of paid Mossad agents out in the streets of Israel wearing their yarmulkes and whatever. And all for what? Some acquaintance of his that did some graffiti that he doesn't even really know. And again, just reinforcing and damping down any criticism of Israel, any criticism of who owns Israel. Because I have no doubt that the Mossad was involved with the Shreepal thing, too. They probably did the dirty work they always do, if there was dirty work, if he didn't just go along with it. They're like the next in line, and they really are serving the crown. And let's remember who created Israel. You know, it was the Balfour Declaration, which was, you know, the Rothschild family created Israel. They're known as the fathers of Israel. And if you say Rothschilds, a lot of people just call you an anti-Semite. I had a woman do it to me the other day. I said, what about if you criticize George Bush? Does that mean I'm anti-Christian? What about if I criticize Saudi Arabia? Am I a Muslim hater? Yeah. What if I criticize Burma? Am I anti-Buddhist? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. But again, they've set that all up to tamp down anybody that's going down that yellow brick road. And most people, they get to that Israel part and they turn back. But if you keep going, you're going to find out who's behind Israel. And you're going to find out it's the Rothschilds and the City of London bankers. And that those are the people who own every central bank in the world, along with the Warburgs, the Rockefellers, the Kuhn Loebs, Goldman Sachs, Interbred, all of them. There's really just one family all together now. And that's where they don't want you to go. But that is exactly where we need to go. It is the crux of the matter. And until we're willing to go there in mass, I'm afraid nothing in this world is going to change, because these same people are just going to tell another lie the very next day, create another conflict, another false flag, another pretext to carry out their agenda. Because they're just, they're probably just lizards, let's face it.
Dean, that makes more sense to me. Do you know, and obviously that's a theme that we've discussed so often on this program over the years, they're the genesis of these people, the entities that might be worshipped by these people, who they're in contact with. I'm wide open to that, obviously, because of my past associations. So these Agenda 2130, depopulation is definitely on the agenda for these people. So when we, and it does give us sleepless nights at times thinking about, well, what if they pushed a country to the brink of launching a nuclear device, which could in turn provoke another country in retaliation to launch a nuclear device, and maybe hundreds of millions might be killed. We do sometimes lose sleep over that, or spend hours sitting there thinking about it, dreading it. But these people might be looking forward to it.
Yeah. And even that scenario, that threat of nuclear war hung over our heads, is actually just another distraction. Yeah, they'll make money on it, the bankers. So there's that. But it's also a way to keep us from talking about the bankers. Let's talk about the bankers. No, we got to talk about a prostitute or a porn star. No, we can go up the ladder a little bit and we can talk about going to war with North Korea. But it doesn't matter if we just don't talk about who's creating these wars, who's paying these people, who's controlling Trump and Clinton and Theresa May and all these leaders. And we have to just get to the head of the snake and we have to cut it off.
Did they know, Dean? This is a question I might have asked you before. Dean Henderson is our guest, by the way, if you've just tuned in late. It's hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Do make a bookmark on your toolbar on your homepage there of Dean's website. Check him out and do read his books if you haven't before. Do you think the likes of how much, I mean, let's talk, when speaking about how much do these puppets actually know, which is an infinitely interesting question. You can obviously talk about Trump because somebody said to Donald Trump, right, Donald, or Mr. President, if his superiors call him Mr. President, which I doubted, somebody said to him, right, Donald, you're having John Bolton as your national security advisor. Mm-hmm. And Trump would have went, what? Or presumably would have went, oh, well, anybody but him. And he was told, no, you're having him. So presumably Trump is aware of the fact that he might be on row or rung seven of the ladder and are seven levels above him. Mm-hmm. How much do they know, Dean, these people?
Well, yeah, that's a really great question and a great point, because it's all compartmentalized, just like the secret societies where there's different levels. And just like the CIA and the MI6 and the Mossad, it's all compartmentalized to where every level only knows on a need to know basis, they call it. And that gives them deniability, they call it. This is all intelligence parlance. It gives them deniability. Well, I didn't know about it. Well, they really didn't know about it, you know, and they're not lying in most cases because it's all compartmentalized. I think Trump suspects that. I think, you know, the day he went into that meeting with Obama, and it was supposed to be, you know, a 10-minute meeting, you know, when they were doing the transfer of power, and it ended up being like an hour. And he came out of it looking kind of shell-shocked. And I had the same thing happen with Jimmy Carter when he went to his meeting to become president with Gerald Ford. He came out looking the same way. And you know, people were talking about, well, they told him about the alien controllers, or they told him about, but they tell you certain things, and they tell you to stay in line, I think, is the bottom line. And they, and I'm not sure that Trump has any idea about, you know, who it is that's above him. But yeah, you're absolutely right. This is how they control leaders, is advisors. They use the advisors. All your national security advisors, all your presidential cabinet level advisors in the United States, if you look at where they came from, they will have either come from the Atlantic Council, which is the group in the United States right now that's basically trying to march us to war with Russia more than any other. And it used to be the Atlantic Union, and it was founded by James Warburg back in the early 1900s. And it established an office in a Rockefeller-owned office building in New York City. And it's all about the special relationship between the Crown and the United States and us being the poodle in that relationship. And so the Atlantic Council, if you watch American TV, that's who's pushing this whole Shreepal lie here. Well, so it's them, or it's the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the affiliate of the Royal Institute of International Affairs in your country. Both controlled by the Rothschilds and the Crown, created by them out of the Business Roundtable back in the early 1900s. Cecil Rhodes and those boys. Same time the Balfour Declaration came about. Same time the Federal Reserve came about in 1913. Or they come from maybe the Trilateral Commission, which is another one of these globalist New World Order, depopulation, Agenda 21, elitist banker groups founded by David Rockefeller, Zig Brzezinski. The trilateral meaning including Japan, Europe, and North America. But it's good. They're going to come from one of those three outfits, or maybe the Heritage Foundation, but it's going to be one of the banker-controlled and created think tanks. And that, so it's through the advisors that they really do influence. And I think that's why Trump has gotten rid of a lot of people, because he smelled rats everywhere he turns. He's like, God, this guy. And so he's getting rid of them, and they make fun of him for that. But I don't have a problem with that as long as he gets rid of them. But it's when he brings in Bolton and Pompeo, you know, the screws came down, and again, this was right when the whole thing happened with Stormy Daniels. And that was the screw that time, you know, and it's got a metaphor, but, I tell you, that's the way they do it. And these guys, all these advisors come from these banker controlled places, and that's how they control these puppet presidents. And they're just puppets, and they kind of think they know right off the bat. They're told, you know, that, hey, this is how it's going to be, but they don't really know how high up it goes. It's all compartmentalized. And you get to 33rd level masonry, and then you become illuminated. And it's the Illuminati. There's 33 spines in our back, okay, and that's where that comes from. And they think they're the head. They think they're smarter than us. They ate from the tree of knowledge, if you want to go biblical. And they were thrown out of the Garden of Eden for it, okay? And they're against God. They're fighting God every day. That's why they create GMO foods. That's why they do all these alchemistic bad things to the earth, like mining, because they think that, you know, God didn't quite make creation right. We can make it better. We're smarter than him. And that's where they call them the Illuminati. And that's not our term. They call themselves the Illuminati, the Illuminated Ones. And that's where you probably are in touch with aliens. And then I even heard there's levels in the Illuminati. There's like 7 levels of the Illuminati. But when you get way up to the top, that's where you're going to be talking about aliens. And I sometimes wonder if aliens aren't Satan. I mean, it's like it's like alien to the earth. Okay, just think about it that way. If you're alien to Mother Earth and you're working against Mother Earth, then you could, you know, that's what some religions have called Satan, you know, devious, deceptive, arrogant with your knowledge, or, you know, even though you don't really have any, you don't have any knowledge. If you're like that, you're an idiot, but you're not in tune with Mother Earth, so therefore you're an alien, you know? And so I don't know what they are, if they're entities or if it's just an energy that's tapped into, or, you know, we gotta, that's another one of these like things with, did Shreepal go along with that? You know, and I think we gotta think out of the box on that one and try to figure that out, but it's a whole nother show. But, no, I think it's compartmentalized, and I think Trump knows there's people above him, but he doesn't know who, and he's just kept in line through fear and through, yeah, you have to have Bolton, exactly. You have to have these certain advisors.
Dean Henderson is our guest. Henderson, lefthook.wordpress.com. Dean, I've been listening to that intently, and while you were chatting there, you threw in the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the roundtable organizations. And that's headed up at the moment by a guy called Richard Haath. And he's absolutely right, Dean. This is a Rockefeller, Rothschild organization. And this guy is obviously crazy. He's stone cold crazy, this Richard Haass. But I suppose there's method in their madness. I might just have a little bit of audio, Dean, which runs for a couple of minutes. Not even a couple of minutes. I've played this on the programme before. Haass was speaking last year at a summit, and he talked about something he called World Order 2.0, which was the future. And the future World Order 2.0 would be a world where national boundaries didn't mean anything anymore, sovereignty didn't mean anything, that countries could come together and could operate in a third country if they felt like it, if they felt that their own interests were being harmed by that country. This is psychotic stuff, but it's the basis for a lot of what you've been writing about for years, what we've been talking about today. I've not had a chance to cue this up, so knowing me, Dean, this is going to be a total mess, and I won't play this in the right place, but I'm going to have a pop. I'm going to have a go at it anyway. Let's see if I got it in the right place.
Very differently in the 21st century. And for the last few hundred years, order was premised on a very simple idea. Big idea, and an innovation when it came up in the 17th century. But it's the idea that this is a world of nation states, and that the organizing principle, the ordering principle, will be sovereignty. And essentially, states will not use force to change borders of other states, and states will respect the borders of others, not just physically, but they'll respect it in a larger sense. They won't be interfering. They'll essentially leave what happens within other states to that country alone. It's a kind of live and let live, hands-off reality. And that was a big idea when it came around in the mid-17th century. It was obviously violated over the next 300-plus years, but it's still a good idea. Saddam Hussein violated it when he went into Kuwait. It was a costly decision. And again, Russia violated it more recently. And we don't want to have a world where this is violated regularly. My argument in the book is that's all good. It's still necessary, but it's no longer sufficient. That if you live in a world of globalization, to make a long story short, nothing stays local for long. If you have computer hackers on your territory, they can cause mischief or worse all over the world. If you have a poultry farm that has unsanitary conditions, certain types of diseases can break out, human transmission, it can cause a global pandemic. If you're India and you decide that your economy forces you to generate a lot more electricity, and the easiest way to do it is through coal, this will have climate change consequences for everyone else in the world, in addition to whatever environmental consequences it may have for you. As we learned on 9/11, a few blocks from here, if a government allows, or one way or another, through choice or weakness, terrorists operate out of its territory, those terrorists can cause havoc halfway around the world. As we saw in Syria, if you have massive flows of refugees, it can destabilize other parts of the world, as we're now seeing in Europe. So my argument is simply, while we need to respect sovereignty and not, again, bring about a world where invasion is commonplace, we also now need to build on it. And my idea is that sovereign entities need to have the obligation to make sure that nothing is allowed to go on within their territorial limits that has adverse consequences for anybody else.
Well, Dean, wonderful, isn't it? You could be doing something in your country that affects climate change. We might have to intervene. You could be allowing terrorists foster in your country. The sovereign borders come down. We should be able to intervene. He called that World Order 2.0. And you've written about how important roundtable institutions like the Council on Foreign Relations are, because they take the orders from the bosses, don't they? And they give those orders to politicians, effectively.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the council, CFR, puts out foreign affairs, and every single congressman in the United States subscribes to that, reads that. And that, so pretty much State Department foreign policy comes from foreign affairs, comes from Council on Foreign Relations. And doesn't this just sound just like U.S. foreign policy, this arrogant idea that we're so democratic, even though we cheated Bernie in the election, even though there's no democracy here, and we are so pompous and sanctimonious that we have the right. But it's not we, you see. It's just they like to use our military. Yeah. And the we, again, where the CFR gets its orders, is the bankers and the industrialists and the trillionaires, the people that, the controllers of this planet that are ruining all of us, ruining the planet along with it. And so we have to, again, climb up this, climb down the yellow brick road, go down the yellow brick road and get to the head of this snake. And we got to get people there. We got to get them up to speed on the depth of this, control, because when you get to the end of it, it's really just simple. And there's just these handful of families, just like you thought when you were 3 or 4 years old, you were right. You know, we all kind of, didn't you all have that, notion when you were a little kid that there was just a few people around the world? There must have been, because everything you saw on TV was like, what? That's a lie. But then when you grow up, you're socialized into it. You're taught to accept it. If you don't accept it, you're branded a, you know, an outsider and a rebel. And they've got this thing now, you know, in the United States, they actually make up diseases. Like there's one called oppositional, I can't remember, but if you're, you know, if you don't go out the program, they start giving you pills. And so that's how it works. And, but the truth is, yeah, that's right. It's just like your gut told you when you're little, and, your gut is where to stay. I mean, people got to get out of their heads a little bit, get out of the news cycle and go with their intuition. You know, we used to have a really good intuition, and God gave us that, Creator gave us that. And you need to really count on that. But of course you have to combine that with a sense of history. And read a lot of history, true history, not lie history, because there's way more of the latter. But yeah, it's that's just that Richard Haass. I mean, to me, that just sounds so much like what you know, John Bolton would say, what's her name would say at the UN about Russia. I mean, it's just so condescending and arrogant, and you know, we're the ones, we're the illuminated ones, and you're just, you know, wow.
Yeah, so, we might see something going on in your country that we say adversely affects us, so we can come in. We've got about 45 seconds left, Dean. And sorry for using 90 seconds, but I wanted to put that audio in because it supported what you were saying. Dean's website is hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Subscribe to the Left Hook column. It's free. And again, there aren't too many people rationally and calmly and academically putting together this information in the way that Dean is doing it. I absolutely endorse it, so I recommend you check it out. You have the last 45 seconds, Dean. Give us a bit of light at the end of the tunnel there. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Well, hey, thanks so much, Richie. You just are so nice to me, and you say the nicest things, and I don't deserve it really, but yeah, I can say the same about you, and I will, because you do a hell of a job, and you really do an important thing what you're doing. I'm honored to have you as a comrade and brother in this fight. And everybody just, you know, you got to keep your head up. You got to, despite all the negative news, you know, you really have to remember that you know, it's a beautiful world that the creator of God or whatever your God, you could just put an O in there and call it good for all I care. I don't really care what your God or your good is, as long as it's good. But whatever it was, created a beautiful world. And these malevolent aliens, they're alien to this world. They're alien to justice and truth and love. They're full of hate. Don't become like them in this fight. You have to stay above it. You have to criticize it, critique it. And I really think in the end, love and anger are the same thing, but you have to direct the anger appropriately. But you can't really love without being angry. I mean, Che Guevara left a, you know, middle-class life in Argentina where he could have been a doctor and went and helped the people of Cuba free themselves and then died, was hunted down by the CIA in Bolivia. There was a lot of love there, and there was a lot of courage there. But the same thing. And don't let this is another lie of theirs where, you know, oh, you're too angry, or oh, you're too focused, you're a hippie, you're too focused on love. It's the same thing. You can't love without being angry about this stuff, and you can't be angry without being full of love. So don't be a robot. Don't be afraid to express yourself and be passionate and keep positive in the big picture, because we have to, because this is all designed to generate this dark energy, and they use this dark energy to take us into these war situations and keep concealed the real controllers of this planet. So it's all got to be seen as one. We're all one. We're all one big family. We're all connected. We're connected to the earth, the rocks, the plants, the animals. And for the sake of all, let's continue this struggle.
HendersonLeftHook.wordpress.com. Check out Dean Henderson if you haven't before. I know that many of our listeners will have connected with Dean before. Dean, thanks. And let's pick this up again in only a few weeks' time. Let's pick it up again next month when you have some time. Thanks, mate.
Sounds great, Richie. Thanks so much for having me.
Anytime. It's an honour. Dean Henderson, hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Check him out. Excellently briefed and researched analysis of what's going on. Don't miss Dean. Bookmark his website there. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're rapidly coming to the end of the programme.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, that's about the end of the programme. It flew by. Thanks a lot again to Dean Henderson. hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. There are a lot of articles on there by Dean going back years. And he updates that website daily. So check it out, as I said, if you haven't checked him out before. Recent interviews that Dean has done with Press TV, amongst other networks. Check him out there if you can. Right, that's it then. I will be back with you tomorrow, Wednesday, at the usual time, 7 p.m. UK time. Thanks for listening to the programme. I really mean that. Thanks to our friend Simon Stewart. Thanks doesn't cut it, really. Top man, Simon, for getting up early in the a.m. to put together the YouTube videos. And you know, everything was demonetized, and you know our channel was deleted with 80,000 subscribers and all of that. And they won't allow us to monetize this new channel. It doesn't look like it. So there's nothing in it for Simon, but it was never his motivation was to earn any money out of it. That was never his motivation. His motivation was doing something to try and spread information, and I'm in his debt for that, Simon. Top man. So thanks to Simon. And to my mate Jean Ann Crowley, who's back in Cleggan in the West after her triumphant return to the stage last Friday at Dublin Arts Centre. She's back in the country, so she is. Right, that's it. We're going to finish with some Neil Young, and look after yourselves and one another. I will be with you at 7 Wednesday as usual. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, the 11th of April 2018. Until then, it's bye from me. Au revoir, auf Wiedersehen. Sláinte gach fóill, eh?